and time for this week's Early Music Show, introduced by Lucy Skeeping.
Welcome to the show. We talk about taking coals to Newcastle. No need, of course, since for centuries Newcastle was at the very hub of England's coal mining industry. But as we'll hear today, we might also talk in much the same spirit of taking music to Newcastle. Where there was wealth, culture was quick to follow. And in the 18th century, Newcastle was indeed wealthy, the pivotal stopover point between north and south. A noble town, the travel writer Celia Fiennes called it. It most resembles London of any place in England. Its buildings are lofty and large, its streets broad and handsome. In 1735, a locally born organist and composer, Charles Avison, set up a series of subscription concerts in Newcastle, which would continue for many decades. These were during the great days of the Industrial Revolution, the gradual emergence of a new mercantile class. And what they wanted was some of the luxuries hitherto only available to those at the top of the social pile and largely in London. Respectability, high culture and good music. And Avison, a contemporary of Thomas Arne of Rule Britannia fame, and only a little younger than Handel, was the dominant figure in all this, the emergence of Newcastle as one of the country's greatest centres of music. In today's programme, we're looking at music making in and around the Newcastle area. And to help us, I'm joined down the line by the author and musicologist Ros Southey from Newcastle University. Welcome to the show, Ros, and many thanks for being our guest today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
We're going to be chatting all through the show, and I'm especially looking forward to getting to know some composers whose music we rarely hear these days. But first, let's listen to something by Avison himself. This is a concerto grosso in D major, performed by the aptly named Avison Ensemble, directed by Pavlo Beznosyuk.
Thank you.
Concerto Grosso in D Major, Opus 4, Number 7, by the Newcastle composer Charles Avison. The Avison Ensemble, directed by Pavlo Beznosyuk. Rod Southey, Avison published that in 1755. Can you say something about his role in Newcastle, not only as a composer, but as an entrepreneur? Because he was quite a pivotal figure, wasn't he?
Certainly, yes. I mean, there were quite a few musicians in Newcastle at the time, but he was certainly the most prominent and well-known. He was actually the youngest son of a local musical family. He would have been taught music by his father. And he wasn't just a concert promoter, he was an organist as well. And he had a very large teaching practice. And he would have been well known not just amongst the tradesmen of the town, but amongst the local gentry as well.
Now, he was influenced by the Italian style. How did that come about?
Well, we're only just beginning to find this out. It appears that at the beginning of his career, he actually was a domestic servant in the household of a man called Ralph Jennison. He may even have been a footman at that point. And Jennison was an MP, so he took his household to London at various times. And it's clear that Avison went with him. And while he was there, he got acquainted with the music of Francesco Geminiani, the foremost composer and violinist of the period. And he obviously made Geminiani's acquaintance, and Geminiani later referred to him as my favourite disciple. So obviously the two got on very well, and Avison learnt a great deal from Geminiani.
Yeah, so much so I think that he adapted some of his music, didn't he?
He certainly did a lot of arrangements. He took on Geminiani's style wholeheartedly in his own music. And I think we're only just beginning to realise how many arrangements of other people's music Avison did, because these things were usually published anonymously. And of course, he did some famous arrangements of people like Scarlatti and so on as well. So he was very much influenced by the Italian style.
And Corelli, I think, says quite a lot of sound of the Corelli sound in his music.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely, because of course Corelli was Geminiani's teacher.
Great. Well, the next concerto we're going to hear is one of the adaptions that Avison made of Geminiani violin sonatas. It's his concerto number 2 in D minor.
Thank you.
The Avison Ensemble, directed by Pavlo Beznosyuk, with Concerto No. 2 in D minor by Charles Avison, one of a collection of concertos based on Geminiani's Opus 1 set of violin sonatas. The Newcastle that Avison knew, with its bridge across the Tyne, was, and still is, the main stopover point between north and south, between London and Edinburgh, in effect. And in the 18th century, local concert life often benefited from visits by top professional musicians as they passed through. Ros, we know one or two particular musicians who made Newcastle their stopping-off point on the way further north, don't we?
Yeah, there were quite a few people who visited the area, particularly violinists. There was a Monsieur Gallo, who was from Naples, who stopped off in Newcastle and Morpeth, indeed, in the 1780s. There was a German violinist, Mr. Noehler, who was leader of the subscription concert in York in the 1740s, who also came here. But perhaps the most prominent of these was a man called Felice Giardini, who was London's favourite violinist in the 1750s and 60s. And he came up here with the Bowes family from Gibside, and he made the acquaintance of Charles Avison, and the two men became very close friends. They collaborated on an oratorio in the beginning of the 1760s, and Giardini would come up every year to play in Avison's midsummer concerts and to hold a benefit of his own. And he would also play in Durham and York as well shortly afterwards.
All these people with their continental-sounding names must have been very exotic, I guess.
Yes, I think they must have made a great impression on the audiences in Newcastle. And it wasn't uncommon for gentlemen to write their praises to the local newspaper. In fact, one gentleman sent a poem to the Newcastle Courant, having heard Signora Cremonini sing. If you like, I can read that to
you.
Oh,
yes, do.
It's a little bit over the top, I must warn you. When Cremonini sings, she thrills my soul with heavenly sounds, whose powers control each turbulent passion and inspires my much-transported heart with soft desires. Upon her rosy lips the angels swell, her voice surpass the notes of Philomel. Admiring cherubs listening fly around and strive to catch the music-dying sound. Then mounting up, they spread their silver wings. To heaven they soar and tune the golden strings. Again renew their songs of endless love and raise fair Cremonini's notes above.
Well, it's all a bit long for one of today's tweets, I think, but not bad all the same. Now, we know that one of Handel's regular singers passed through Newcastle, an Italian, Christina Passerini.
Yes, she and her husband came to Newcastle in 1752 on their way from Edinburgh to London, in fact. And in London, she actually became one of Handel's singers in his oratorios.
Well, we're going to imagine that perhaps, as it was in her repertoire, she sung this next aria in Newcastle. Why not? It's from Handel's oratorio Deborah. Now sweetly smiling peace descends. And Natasha Ducray is the soloist with the Frankfurt Baroque Orchestra, directed by Joachim Carlos Martini. And we also know that she performed English and Scottish airs when she was in Edinburgh. So we're going to follow that with soprano Mari Lawson and Concerto Caledonia singing Pinky House by James Oswald.
Thank you. exchange you love. In shades let now creation mourn, sylph under faithless
Mari Lawson, the soprano, with Concerto Caledonia, directed by David McGuinness, with James Oswald's Pinky House. And before that, we heard Now Sweetly Smiling Peace Descends from Handel's oratorio Deborah, sung there by Natasha Ducray. Two pieces we might imagine were sung by the soprano Christina Passerini when she passed through Newcastle in 1752. I'm Lucy Skeeping, and in today's Early Music Show here on Radio 3, I'm exploring some of the musical activity in the northeast of England during the 18th century with my guest, Ros Southey. Well, so far, Ros, we've focused mainly on Newcastle, but it was far from being the only city in the northeast with a thriving concert life, wasn't it?
There were many places in the northeast where you could hear music in concert. The city of Durham, for instance, had a thriving musical life throughout the century. And also smaller towns like Sunderland or Darlington, Tynemouth, Hexham, North Shields and so on, all had concerts roughly from the middle of the century onwards. And one of the interesting things about this is that each one seems to have had a slightly different character. So Newcastle always preferred new music and was a bit avant-garde, whereas Durham was much more conservative in style and preferred the older style of music. In Sunderland, things seem to have been much more genteel. You got tea in the interval of the concerts there. So every area was slightly different, although they used the same building blocks of concerts and so on.
Fascinating. You mentioned Durham just now, and our next piece is by a composer called John Garth, who I believe was based in Durham. Tell us a little about him.
Garth was about 15 years younger than Charles Avison, and very definitely a protege of his. The two men were great friends. He was indeed based in Durham, although he wasn't connected, as far as we know, with the cathedral. He was actually organist of Sedgefield, which is just south of Durham City. And he ran concerts and held concerts in Durham, and he also played in Aveson's concerts in Newcastle. He was what appears to have been a virtuoso cellist and also a composer of some considerable ability.
Which brings us naturally to Garth's cello concertos. Let's hear part of one now. This is number 5, and we're going to hear the first movement performed by Richard Tunnicliffe with the Aveson Ensemble.
Thank you.
first movement of Cello Concerto No. 5 by the 18th century Durham-based composer John Garth, performed there by Richard Tunnicliffe with the Avison Ensemble, directed by Pavlo Beznosyuk. Well, now, you might not expect to hear the name of the astronomer William Herschel in a music programme, but this great telescope maker and discoverer of the planet Uranus was also a passionate music lover. He played a variety of instruments, composed several symphonies as well as church music, and over the years was an organist in a number of cities and towns, among them Leeds, Halifax and Bath. And, Ros, I gather he also came into contact with Charles Avison.
Yes, Herschel's a very interesting character, actually, because he was, again, of a musical family, but he was brought up in Hanover, and he came to London with his brother in the hope of earning a great deal of money, because London was reputed as a place to make all your money as a musician. Unfortunately, they didn't make much money, and he got a job with the Earl of Darlington's militia, which was quartered in Richmond. And he came north with them, decided he didn't like it at all, and ended up setting himself up as a freelance music teacher in Sunderland, of all places, which at the time was known as Sunderland by the Sea. And he came into contact with Avison because he played in Avison's concerts, and he also played in a pleasure gardens which was set up in Newcastle in the 1750s and 60s, which was known as Spring Gardens, roughly opposite where the football ground is at the moment.
Now, we're going to hear one of his pieces in a moment, which I think, Ros, you described as an accompanied keyboard sonata. What does this mean exactly?
It's a very peculiarly northeastern genre, and basically it's a harpsichord sonata with accompanying parts, usually for violin and cello. And the idea is it's intended for the domestic market, where you may have a family grouping with a very good harpsichordist, for instance, and a bit of a struggling violinist and cellist, and they more or less just double up parts of the harpsichord part.
Thank you. Timothy Roberts, the harpsichordist there, with Florian Deuter on the violin and Mark Caudle on the cello, performing Sonata in D Major by William Herschel, more famously known as the Astronomer Royal to George III. Herschel then was evidently a very talented man, but I guess, Roz, that the star of today's programme has to be the highly professional Newcastle-born composer whose music we heard at the beginning, Charles Averson. Looking back at his achievements nearly 2.5 centuries after his death, how would you rate Averson?
He's very interesting, I think, not just musically, but also as a social phenomenon in a way. Musically, he was a little bit of a dead end because he stuck to the Italian influence throughout his life, even when musical styles were changing and people were moving on to a totally different style. What really fascinates me about him is that he was such a good businessman. You know, this is the period at which the consumer society is being born. And Averson, like Handel, was an entrepreneur, very successful in making money, making a living, and making music available to a lot of people. But he never once compromised his musical principles. His objection to Handel was that Handel composed too much under commercial pressures, and therefore some of the music he wrote was not of the highest standard. Averson would never have done that. He kept to his musical principles throughout his life and made a very great success of it from a business point of view as well.
Well, many thanks, Roz Southey, for giving us the lowdown on musical life in the northeast of England during the 1700s. Obviously a far lively and more thriving scene than many of us might have imagined. So let's end as we began with a work by Charles Averson, part of his last publication, his Opus 10. It's a Concerto Grosso.
Thank you.
The Concerto Grosso in D, Opus 10, No. 4 by Charles Aveson, ending this week's Early Music Show, which was exploring the music of Newcastle and the North East in the 18th century. It was presented by Lucy Skeeping, and the producer was Lindsay Kemp.